Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Rise and shine, sports investors. It is another beautiful day in the neighborhood. Thursday, August 20th. Let's cock-a-doodle-do it. This is the early line right here on Sports Grid, giving you the edge. I'm Dane Martinez, as usual. I got my main man, Kevin Walsh, live and direct, helping me give you all the information you need to make it a profitable day. And we put the fun in functional sports content. And Kev, we've got a couple of series. Okay, and that's what's going to happen. Yesterday, we had, you know, the game, the teams that went out to open the playoffs played their game twos. And so in a couple of situations, we've got teams that are getting out to a 2-0 lead. In other situations, we have series that are tied 1-1 after two. What was your biggest takeaway from the action that we saw across the association yesterday? Because, you know, I think there are some teams that are announcing themselves as ready to go, a la the Boston Celtics. Mm-hmm. And there's some series that I think are gonna go, you know, past the 4, 5, 6 when we see TPD on kind of game times of game 6 and 7. I'm thinking some of those are gonna come to fruition. What'd you notice yesterday?
Yeah, you know, yesterday, I think, because we're gonna dive right into these games specifically. But yesterday was the first time that we did jump into the players prop market in the playoffs, right? And you and I spent a good portion yesterday trying to identify some spots that we liked. And we had one in each game. And Donovan Mitchell, credit to him, man. Like, he followed up the 57 with somehow maybe even a better game because of the efficiency he put forward. But him going over his prop by a half point stopped us from a clean sweep. And now, listen, man, these things can come back to the normal here. I'm not here to wave a flag. Woo, we're the best ever. That's not the point. My point is, though, just that one game under the belt, I think, really helps have an idea of what you can kind of expect. Hmm. Have an idea of who's going to come out the next game hungry. And I just, those are the kind of things that ultimately I think we're going to look to try and do again today. You know, again, we've been doing this a while, Dane, right? We know better than think that, oh, I've beaten the props market. No.
Right.
Because as much as I lost the Mitchell thing by a hook, I won Kyle Lowry only by a half point. So we know how this can fluctuate, right? Like, that's how it goes. But I just think having that game under the belt really, really helps, because you can get then a better feel, I think at least, as to what to expect for game number two.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember, in this sports investment world, man, if you are at like 55%, you are doing A-OK. And obviously, Kevin, as I always say, There is a reason they keep on building those huge buildings in the desert, right? Someone's doing well down there, and it's usually not the public. But you talk about, you know, it's good to have a game under your belt. It is good to actually, in a game, be able to see one of your studs for 36 minutes on the court. That's how long Kristaps Porzingis was on the court yesterday, right? And he drops 23, supports with 7 rebounds as well, but shoots over 50% from the field. And Kev, to me, this is a big reason, you know, you talk about that Dallas offense, right? And their kind of points per 100 possessions and how amazing it was. Well, I got to tell you something. Now across 2 games, Kev, if the Dallas Mavericks have an eligible Kristaps Porzingis, they look like the better team. If I look at 4 halves that have been played, the only ones the Clippers were better in, as we recommend our radio audience across the country, including the mightier 1090 out there on the West Coast. Kev, honestly, right? In these 2 games, there have been 4 halves. The only half that I think the Clippers were better in, Mavericks didn't have KP.
Yeah, no, I think that that's pretty undeniable at this point, right? And now the idea that the Mavs were going to have that game if Kristaps doesn't get tossed obviously has more legs when they followed up this performance. And what a credit to their bench. Multiple guys giving them 13 or more. 3 different guys actually fitting that description. And allowed Luka Doncic to only play 28 minutes. Now, he again looked fantastic. 28 points, 8 boards, 7 assists. But we talked about this, Dane. He's going to have to be better turning over the basketball or not doing that. Right. Only 1 turnover. Cut him 10 less turnovers. And it does, to me, bring up what might be a really big thing for this Clippers team, and that is Patrick Beverley. Now, that's not to say that we didn't always know that Pat Bev was important, but when you talk about this team's defensive capabilities, right, you're going to start at the top of the list with Kawhi, then Paul George, and then Patrick Beverley, right? Usually, I think that is how you would discuss these guys. Clearly, this team missed Pat Bev. And I think part of that comes from the fact that Kawhi Leonard does carry a heavier offensive load and is in round 1 not going to play 48 minutes on both sides. And I'm not saying that he should, but that's just the real, like, the reality of it. And Paul George continues to offer up what I believe is one of the best nicknames in all of basketball, which is Playoff P. Because I think it's one of the funniest things that's ever happened, where he called himself Playoff P and then proceeded, as we always like to say, Joe Ingles had this dude in the Boston Crab for a full series. Last year, Damian Lillard sends him packing, no problem. And he's like, it's a bad shot. Like, dude, the series is over. Like, you got to let it go. And he showed up in full colors today. I don't think he made a 3 until the 4th quarter. 4 of 17 shooting, 2 of 10 from 3. Paul George, like, and this is the thing. You might be like, ah, when's Paul George going to play that bad again? Game 4? Game 5? Maybe both.
Yeah, no, that's where I was going to go as well. Paul George, 4 of 17 from the floor, 2 of 10 from 3-point land, right? Like, you know, maybe all these LA teams need to really get better shooting. But Paul George, we'll see if he bounces back in game 3. When we come back, there's 3 other games from yesterday to talk about and the 4 today. A lot of basketball to discuss. We're off and running right here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back in, everybody, right here to the Early Line on Sports Grid. Dave Martinez and, of course, as usual, Kevin Walsh. Kev, I got to ask, you remember yesterday how one of the points you made about the Lakers shooting was that, like, nobody had a shooting night that was, like, on par with what they usually do, that, like, you know, looked like the basket, their basketball card? Well, I got to say the exact opposite for what the Utah Jazz did yesterday. Okay, the Jazz won 124 to 105 against Nuggets, and as I look at some of these shooting performances, right, like, I can't find someone that was below 50%. Donovan Mitchell 10 of 14. Joe Ingles, as you know, doesn't miss, 7 of 12, right? Like, Royce O'Neal 3 of 4. Rudy Gobert 7 of 10. You know, they all, even Jordan Clarkson doing damage off the bench with 26 points. I mean, they just were not missing. You talk about an efficient performance. You set it off there, right? Like, in game one, Donovan Mitchell went off for like 57 points, but yet there's a case to be made that he actually played a better game in the Jazz's game two victory.
Yeah, absolutely sickening as we bet this man under 20 for him to have this level of efficiency, but credit to him. Okay, better than 70% from the floor, making 6 of 7 from three. And it's very important to note here, okay, because the final box score is a little bit deceiving. 45% from three, compare that to Denver's 48%. No. The Jazz had shot from three 57% through three quarters. Fourth quarter of the game was done. He scored 20 points. Okay, so I thought, and I saw that, and I think that that's a very, very good point to make, that they just were scorching earth hot in this game. And now there's a lot to figure out with this one, okay? And what's really interesting to me, the expectation is Mike Conley is going to be back for game number three. It seems like it could come down to the wire, but it seems like Conley is going to be back. And we now see, okay, going into game number three, as it currently sits, the Nuggets are laying 2 points. That is very, very substantial. When you consider that when Mike Conley was supposed to be playing game number one and nobody knew, they were laying 3, 3.5. So now what they've basically done here is like, oh, we like what we've seen from the Jazz. And they've moved this number on down. So I think that that is very noteworthy now. They believe that the Jazz are a lot liver in this series coming out of this game. For me, I just think the big question is, you know, when it comes to Donovan Mitchell, is this about to be for real? Because, and I don't mean to say for real.
Don't we know that already?
Is he about to be this consistent? No, we don't. This level of consistency is not what he's put forward thus far in his career. Like, the Donovan Mitchell we know shoots 35% from the floor, if that, in his next game. But to be honest, do I have the confidence to go that direction? I don't know. But more importantly, Dan, because we've talked again about now what do these player prop markets look like, I'm going to be very interested to see what they do with him because, you know, his efficiency, his output out of this world. But usually he's a little inconsistent, and Mike Conley's coming back. That last number was 29.5. Do you think they leave it there? Do you think they take a couple points back and put it at 25.5, where it usually is when Mike Conley's around? Very interesting.
It is interesting, and I think the biggest part of that is the added variable of Conley, as you discussed, right? Because, A, Conley's the one, he's going to have the ball in his hand for most of the time, right? So you got to figure the game then on some level has to come to Mitchell. But of course, he makes the right play. I do believe that it would, you know, you got to shave a little bit off of Mitchell's production if and when Conley does come back. But you're right. I mean, Mitchell has been amazing, not only with the output in game one, but the efficiency in game two. Let me ask you about it this way, because out of every series I've seen so far, right? I believe, at least, what we are seeing are maybe two evenly matched teams. Like, I believe out of all these series so far, I would be the most confident that this one is going to go long. Kev. So I wanted to ask you, there's this market about like the series total games, right? And we've talked about this, but in other conversations, the idea of like maybe you get value because the books are handicapping it with a little bit of inconsistency. That's the way we've talked about this, right? And we've talked about it in the way of like, oh, hey, maybe it'll be in five and you get an extra 10, 15 cents of juice because it could happen the other way. But in this series, I think it's interesting because it could go either way. And there is value, in my opinion. I want to ask you about this, Kev. You know, my fundamental premise here is I do not think in this series, either one of these teams is going to win the next three in a row. Okay? I don't think it's going five, right? That's what it would be. Like one team all of a sudden gets dominant from here on out. If you look at the series total games market for the Nuggets and the Jazz, five games plus 255, six games plus 152, seven games plus 158. Kev, I know it could be seen as getting a little cute, but technically, I could bet six and seven games in this series. Come out on top.
Yes, you could. Now, if you play these, let's just say for 100 a pop, right?
Yep.
And you're winning between $52 and $58. So yep. We're taking a risk here, but if I'm doing some math, right, you're kind of risking 200 to win 50. So let me put it to you this way. Would you bet minus 400 this series doesn't go five?
I think I would. I mean, you know, I think I would. I do not see one of these teams, or in the Jazz case, them winning four in a row, or Denver coming back and winning three in a row. I think this is going to be one of those tighter series. And I can get either team in six, either team in seven, right?
100%.
So, I think it's interesting. I think you're right. When you add it up and do the math, you're right. It does wind up being something like that because of, all the outcomes possible. But yeah. I know I don't want to lay like minus 390 on much of anything. Right. And that's what it could be. But yeah, maybe I would have that level of confidence. Like if it's Amanda Nunes in the octagon, I'll lay it. Right. So,
I guess just my minus four. I don't think typically I just make that point because, yes, you look at it and you go. But I just think typically, right, you know, you wouldn't lay minus 400 on like the Clippers right now to win their.
You are correct.
Minus 340. Right. I know that, you know, and I know you've kind of been going back and forth, but I believe that's the team that you still have to win the title. Like, them to get out of the first round is minus 340.
Right.
So it's, you know what I'm saying? I get your point.
But to be honest, and you're right. I before the playoffs, I did talk about the Clippers, right? But at the same time, I also said, you know, this Luka and KP is live, right? So I believe it's just what I've also seen in the first two games of this series is another piece that makes me think this one goes long.
Which again, I'm not disagreeing with. Like, if someone were to ask me, is this going to end in five? I'd say no. And maybe somebody would tell you that it should be priced at higher than minus 400. Maybe it should be minus five, minus 600. So maybe you are getting value. I just think it is important to note that it's basically a minus 400 bet.
It absolutely is important to note that, but there is a universe that exists in sports investing, Kev, where something could be that crazy of a number, right? Something that we kind of are allergic to and are like, nah, chill. And yet there are cases where it could still represent value, okay? Not to say that, like, you want to put it in, not to say that it's smart, but it could still represent value even at that kind of a number. That's why I bring up something like Amanda Nunes, the octagon, you know what I mean? But absolutely. Anything else you saw from this series? What do you think about Jokic and Gobert going back and forth at each other like this? You know, it's interesting to me, but there were times when Gobert was, you know, had him in the Boston Crab, and other times where Jokic looks like the most skilled big man on this planet.
Yeah, I mean, Jokic has no fear going at this guy. It's very obvious. 28 points, 11 boards, 6 assists, was pretty efficient, all things considered. But, you know, and Michael Porter Jr. played really well. It just, I think it comes down to the fact that their bench did not give them a lot. And by the way, we should note, Will Barton gone from the bubble, probably not coming back. And we do not know when Gary Harris. And maybe those losses are hurting this team more than we kind of gave it credit for.
Yeah, and remember, we've talked about this, right? The depth will be tested eventually. So that's unfortunate news about some of the nuggets that are necessary. We come back and talk about these other series, but we got the news update right now.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Grid, of course, including our radio audience around the country, the mightier 1090 out there. Thank you for waking up on the West Coast with us. I am Dane Martinez. I got my main man, Kevin Walsh, with me, as always, bright and early in the morning, giving you the edge. That's what we do here on the early line. And Kev, the Boston Celtics also went up 2-0 in their series against Philadelphia. They get a W, 128-101. And listen, this game was tight after the first half, okay? We were tied at halftime, and then the Boston Celtics blew the doors off of the Philadelphia 76ers. You know, 38 points to kind of come back in the second quarter, another 33 in the third, led by Jason Tatum, who, you know, listen, is shooting well, 60% from the field. He had 33 points. Jaylen Brown, also a nice game. Kemba Walker as well. Listen, these two young wing players for the Boston Celtics are truly ascending. I know somebody who talked about that before the playoffs, but even without Gordon Hayward, the Celtics offense looks good. We talked about Joel Embiid needing to be completely dominant. Kev has a nice box score with 34 and 10, but not enough to get it done for Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Sixers came out on a 25-11 run.
Yeah.
The thing about that, right? They were up 14 early. The lead got cut to 6 by the time the first quarter was over. And by the time they went into half, they were lucky to only be down 6. I mean, they gave it back almost instantly, did this team. Now, there's two ways to look at this. With the Gordon Hayward injury, one of the things that we've pretty consistently seen in the NBA is that initial first game without a player pop from a team. They seemingly understand the importance. They step up. They're extra motivated. Everybody expects them to feel the absence immediately, and they don't. And the Celtics scored a buck 28. And you would look at this and say, man, were they being held back by Gordon Hayward? I mean, they look fantastic. And they scored.
They're better without him, Kev. They're better without him.
Exactly. They scored almost 20 more points without him. But I think that is noteworthy in that potentially does this next game around, well, next go around, do they feel his absence a little bit more? The real lingering question is, does it matter? Because the Sixers had that great first quarter. And honestly, you could argue they left some meat on the bone by only putting up 33 with how hot they started. That team came out to start the second half. I had a live bet on this team. I thought they'd start to shoot a little bit better. They had 2 points through the first 4 or 5 minutes of the first half. Offensively, it was bad. I mean, Joel Embiid offensively was great. 34 points. That's what, you know, you want to see from him. He was continually aggressive. But Tobias Harris, another wildly inefficient game. Al Horford only scores 4 points, takes 3 shots. The team as a whole shoots 5 of 21 from deep. And, you know, can that get better? Sure. I think we're looking at this, though, and I kind of was, you know, in my mind, Dane, just trying to figure out the Sixers team more and more and more. What do I want to do with this team going into game three, game four? This team really going to get swept here? And with this Ben Simmons injury, I think it's starting to stand out to me a little bit more that the way that this team was going to win the title, if that was actually going to be a thing that they were going to do, it was going to be by being the best defensive team in the league. And they've lost arguably their best defensive player, because I know people hold Embiid and have very high regard, but of this season,
the perimeter for sure, yeah.
Yeah, undoubtedly their best perimeter defender, because Ben Simmons is one of the best perimeter defenders the NBA has to offer, right? And now, they obviously, you know, Matisse Thybulle is great, but that's just a lot to ask from him. Al Horford's lost a step. But offensively, like, Josh Richardson's more defense than offense. He's a good player. Tobias Harris, the way he's struggling on the offensive side, is not great. Shake Milton, Matisse Thybulle, like, these are just not guys that you're supposed to be trusting in this spot. Alec Burks, like, people are like, man, what a bad game from Alec Burks. I cannot believe that we're relying here on Alec Burks. Like, this team was supposed to be a defense-first, lock-you-down type of squad. They're missing Ben Simmons, which is going to make that almost impossible. And now on the offensive side, and this is, you know, back-to-back games here where they weren't even able to touch 105, and that's very, very concerning.
So then wait a second, Kev, because I hear everything you're saying, but then it confuses me when you say you don't know how to play Philadelphia moving forward. Everything you've said seems to lend itself to one direction on how to play Philadelphia moving forward, and it's to fade them. And I would also ask you, you know, we've talked about the character of certain teams, right? The vibe, the connectivity, the culture of some teams. I think we have both said we don't necessarily peg Philly as the kind of mature team that's going to handle adversity, bounce back, and kind of show their toughness now that they are down 2-0. So let me ask you, like, what's on the other side of your mind? Because everything you're saying out loud, at least, seems to make the decision pretty clear for you.
So I think typically you would, this game would have one big 3-point shooting performance in them. And at the end of the day, right, like, let's just say I think the series is going to be able to get to 5. Well, that means I got one game here where, you know, you would be able to pick a spot. Like, do we think the Celtics are going to sweep them? Like, and this is the tough thing about this, right? If the Celtics were up 2-0 after 2, okay, playing at TD Garden, like, eh, no surprise there, but they're going back to Philly.
Right.
They're not going back to Philly now, right? So that's probably why, maybe a sweep is more likely. But another part of it, again, is, you know, does the Gordon Hayward absence catch up to them a little bit more in, say, a game 3 or a game 4? And I just also think Tobias Harris is currently 10 of 30 from the field in this series. Now, I know that this team has very good winged perimeter defenders in the Boston Celtics between Smart, Tatum, Brown. But you usually expect better games from Tobias Harris there. And I would even argue to you that, you know, while Embiid put up, you know, 34 and 10 and was fantastic in that regard and only had 2 turnovers, 11 of 21 from the field. I mean, his player prop going into the second half was 41.5. Like, they were just like, oh, yeah, he's going to score another 20 because he can do whatever he wants to this team. Like, I would tell you that Embiid still has a better game in him. So maybe when I say I don't know what to do here, it's the Celtics are going to advance through this series. It would floor me to see any other result. But I think unless you believe this is going to be a clean sweep, which in my opinion might be a little bit of an overreaction for 2 games, then we still have games 3 or 4. We would have to pick our spot with Philly.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think Boston's going to sweep them necessarily, but I do think it could be 5. And I think the more predominant kind of analysis for me is a feeling that, you know, the Philadelphia 76ers have never been constructed as a team that, like, will kind of avoid the, you know, Cancun on 3 kind of mindset. And I think that they could be dead man walking. You also, I know from our conversations on other shows here, don't necessarily believe Brett Brown is the right man to, like, kind of snap them out and lead them to a comeback in this series. So we shall see what they look like without Gordon Hayward, they being the Celtics. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are a combination on the wing that is going to be heard from in this NBA playoffs. There was one other game too that I do want to get to before we have the break, Kev, and the Toronto Raptors. It's so interesting, right? Like, they ho-hum, keep going along, continue to dominate, you know, and Gabe Morenci would be proud, but they keep on doing what they are supposed to do. We see Milwaukee get tripped up in a game one. We see the Lakers sleepwalk early, right? That doesn't happen with these Toronto Raptors. Now, yes, the Nets were up in this game, you know, for a lot of it, but it didn't matter. You know, the Toronto Raptors come storming back. And after all the love, Kev, we've been giving to Caris LeVert recently here for this Nets team and their kind of fight, they only go down by five. But I got to tell you, any game where Caris LeVert goes 5 of 22 from the field, Nets ain't winning that one, Kev.
No, but again, like you said, they were in this thing throughout.
They were. Yes, they were.
Yes, they're up 2-0. They're playing the worst team of any of the top seeds that, like, when we go 1 through 1 and 2s, they're playing the worst team, in my opinion, undoubtedly. Now, there's a big story here is that Joe Harris is gone. Okay, he's left the bubble for a non-medical reason, and he's had 14 points. He had 15 boards, which is crazy. Logged 39 minutes for this team, as if they can afford to lose another guy. If he were to rejoin this team, they'd have to push it to 6 or 7. They'd be lucky to grab one, right? The most interesting thing for this series to me moving forward, and again, give Brooklyn their credit. They covered that number pretty comfortably, okay? Yeah. The most interesting thing for me in this series, though, is going to be the prop market. So you mentioned Caris LeVert, right? Mm-hmm. And what they're going to do with his number. Scored 15 in the first game, 16 in this one. But his efficiency has been terrible. 5 of 14, I think, in game one, and now 5 of 22 in this last game here, Dane. But the attempts are there. So how much can they move this number down? Because as long as the attempts are there, they might get burned. But also, what are they going to do with his assist prop? The other day, I think I saw it at 7.5. Really, really juiced. Game one, 15 in assists. Comes back around with 11 assists. But could he now, if that number gets bumped up, do they dare post a 9.5 without Joe Harris? Does that become a little bit more difficult of a proposition for him? Now, Joe Harris only made, you know, 4 shots, and I don't know how many of those Harris did assist on, but I just think that is also a part of that conversation. And then on the other side of this, Dane, from the prop market perspective, okay? I mentioned I played Lowry over 20.5. We got the 21. It felt deserved. I felt like he should have scored more, but that's okay. We got it by the hook. But I left this game, to be honest with you, saying, all right, I'm happy, but might have been playing the wrong guy here on Toronto because they've got 3 main scorers, right? Lowry, right. Siakam, Van Vliet. Van Vliet is pretty consistently priced as the third guy, the third fewest points in the prop market. Thus far, has been this team's leading scorer and had double-digit assists in both of these games. We need to be very, very aware of what they do with his props in this next game because if they don't over-adjust, we might be attacking a guy listed as option 3 that actually might be option number 1.
Listen, I've been telling you, Kev, about Freddie Van Vliet. I think he's got a max contract on the horizon. That'll do it for the games we're taking our takeaways from. We turn our attention to today's action, the props, the totals, the lines, all that when we come back on the early line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back in, everybody, right here to the early line on Sports Grid. Dave Martinez and Kevin Walsh giving you the edge. Kevin, let's turn our attention to the 4 games that are going on today as these series get going with their game 2s. We start with the Indiana Pacers and the Miami Heat. Remember, the Heat got a win in the first one, 113-101. I say that because 113-101, remember, Kev, I do the math for us here on the early line. So by last check, those two things add up to be 214. And I am intrigued by the 215 total on the board today for this game. It is by far, Kevin, the lowest of the 4 totals today. The Miami Heat will come into this one as 4.5-point favorites. I got to think the biggest thing in this one, remembering game one, Victor Oladipo left the game early. Without Oladipo, with Jimmy Butler focused on TJ Warren, as we know he will be, without the Masked Singer, how are the Pacers going to put the bucket in the basket, the ball in the basket?
Yeah, I don't know, honestly. So you look at this last game here. No, but I mean, they scored 101 in the last meeting. In my opinion, game number six in the restart is it actually matters, because it felt like both teams were really going for it, and they were held to 92 points here. I don't trust them. This number is low, criminally low. This should be like, you know, biggest play of the day, you know, 5% of the bankroll, whatever, you know, all that. Like, this should be that. But I don't trust the Pacers enough. So I think if you want to play this, I might look to isolate the Miami Heat team total of what I believe is 109.5. And this team has scored 113 and 114 in those two meetings. And they have bigger offensive performances on them. Because here's my thing, and maybe you'll disagree here, because maybe you think the Pacers have more legs in this upcoming game. But I don't really see a world where this game gets over and the Heat don't go over their team total.
I'm with you. I think that, especially if Oladipo, and remember, he is questionable at this point, I think it would be a problem for Indiana. And I also believe that Miami, will score in this one. I got to tell you the truth, out of these series, and I know this is like a 4-5 kind of matchup, and technically Miami's the five, I think out of the games that we are seeing today, this one may be, I guess, you know, Milwaukee, and they got a big 12-point spread, but I think Indiana is something close to dead man walking in this series. Everyone was fascinated by the kind of performance Miami had in game one on both sides of the floor. I find it hard to, you know, find the path for these Pacers to get right back in this series. Like, how, like, let's put it this way, Kev. What are the indicators you would need to see in watching this game in the first half to be like, oh, no, Indiana is there? Like, what are you looking for? Is it a kind of flow on offense? Is it something on the defensive side of the ball? What would it be like? Let's say this was an in-game live kind of situation. What would you be looking for to gain faith or confidence in the Pacers? Because I can't find it.
I would probably be, oh, look, they had a hot game from deep. They're up 15. It's going to be hard for Miami to come back. I mean, like, you know what? Like, as long as this thing's tight, I would trust Miami to come away with this game here. I just don't know. Look, and it's not a knock on the Pacers, man. I just don't think they have the horses. Their all-star's gone. Their former all-star might not be available. TJ Warren, their new all-star, is nowhere near 100%. I mean, the ask here is just a lot. For a team that, Dane, like, if everything was even, right, the Heat would probably still be small favorites. If Sabonis and Oladipo, like, they would still be small favorites. There's just so much working against this team. So I think here, you know, I like Miami again. I back them to win this series in less than seven. If you wanted to go with a player prop that I'm interested in, it's Duncan Robinson. His points total is 12.5. Made threes is 3.5. So I think both of those are more than live, where he came off of the game that he was 2 of 8 from deep. He'll keep going. He'll keep shooting, and he'll get his. So that's going to be, I think, one prop market I might see myself playing in.
Fair enough. I was intrigued by that as well. There is no props for Victor Oladipo, so keep on watching out for that. And if not, who on the Pacers could soak up some of that usage rate? Something to look for. As we go to the next game here, Kev, you know, this one is intriguing to me. OKC and Houston, right? The revenge tour for Chris Paul continues. I got to ask you, the Rockets are 2.5-point favorites, right? They get the win in game one. Okay. And they, you know, play well. They shoot, you know, well, they score 123 points without Russell Westbrook, right? Is this going to catch up to them over time? Or do you have faith that the Rockets can just keep on bombing away?
So they're going to keep bombing away regardless, right? And the question is always going to be, how efficient can they be in this game? Now, I told you, my big worry here was the defensive strategy that Billy Donovan put forward that allowed James Harden to have 37 points quite comfortably, and I think very well. It could be his series low if, like, Westbrook doesn't come back. I legitimately feel that that defensive strategy can lend itself to this. However, okay, two things that really stood out to me from this game. That, well, one of them is not a standout, but it's just the point with the Rockets. They go up and down. So if they just went up, Dane, they're on their way down. That's just what we usually expect from this team.
Okay? Well, the variance of it all, yeah.
Right. But I admit to being nervous about, you know, getting ready for the down because of how they're defending Harden. They might be able to keep such a base level of production if that defensive strategy continues. But the reason why it might not, as well as their offensive game plan taking a bit of a shift and potentially turning the corner, was just kind of a very forward, I think, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, as well as Billy Donovan, just talking about the defensive strategy that the Rockets put forward, somewhat catching them a little bit off guard. Now, honestly, watch tape. I don't know why they probably spent way too much time watching the games they matched up. Nope, those games were meaningless. Clint Capella's gone. But right. They were like, listen, we saw some things and we'll correct and we'll adjust here. So, and I think you're, you know, for the most part, people still like Billy Donovan as a coach, I would say, right? So people would think that he can make those necessary adjustments, and you trust a guy like Chris Paul to figure it out here. So, look, Dane, we've not locked anything in yet. But, you know, forget the 2.5 points. Plus 124, the Thunder on the money line here, and catch the Rockets on their way down is going to be something I'm looking at. Consider that this is, you know, some might say a 4-point overreaction. That's a big move. That's a very, very big move from one game to the next.
No, I hear you. And remember, we've been talking about this Houston Rockets team in a specific way for the better part of 5 months, Kev, right? That the idea of their variance is key. And we talk about, like, will they shoot over 40% from three, right? They put up the 120 something in game one. You're talking about this up and down, right? Obviously, I believe you're right. The variance is there. You can zig when other people zag. I do want to ask you, though, you're talking about the way the Thunder will defend James Harden. And we talked about this, I believe, after game one or previewing game one. It's kind of a fork in the road, right? The pick your poison aspect. I fundamentally believe, you know, and press me if you think I'm wrong, that it's one of two options, right? You either try to slow down Harden, right, by running the double teams and all that stuff, and then the other guys can beat you, right? The Eric Gordons of the world, like whatever it is, right? Or you don't leave to support on Harden, right? You make sure these other guys don't have open threes when you pass the rock around the perimeter. But in that scenario, Harden's liable to go off for 53, right? Mm. So if you think you know which way Donovan and the Thunder will play it, doesn't there have to be opportunity in the prop bet market, right? Because either you're thinking, oh, they're going to stay home on everybody else. I'm taking the over on Harden. He's going to go off. Mm. Or if you think they're going to try to, you know, slow James Harden, isn't there probably an opportunity with, I don't know, Covington, Gordon, PJ Tucker, someone else, you know, that is going to wind up getting, you know, the open threes in rotation and having to pick up the slack if they look to put Harden in the Boston Crab?
So I think that Gordon might have value regardless coming off of a 20-point game because he's option number two. And you would think that he's going to be able to, you know, 17 and a half. I think that might, there is just a way you can play this. Here's the issue, though, Dane, honestly. With the way that they're playing, right? So the idea is Harden will have to beat us. We won't help off. Except that doesn't work because he goes right past, let's say, Dennis Schroeder. And instinctively, they help off. Because of course they do. Because James Harden is about to walk to the basket. And then he throws it at Daniel House in the corner, who goes, do I want this open three or should I swing it once more? Nah, I'll swing it once more. And then Eric Gordon is wide open, down, bottom of the net. And that, so they're, that's the problem with the strategy, is they're not doing either one. They think they're saying, oh, we'll let Harden beat him. Because here's the thing, Harden only had 3 assists, probably had 15 hockey assists, though. That's the problem with the way that they're attacking this offensive game plan. I understand what you're saying, right? You should be able to choose either or. But this game plan lends itself, in my opinion, to not picking either and getting torched. They scored 123, Dane, and they played 16 awful minutes of offense, 19 in the fourth quarter, and the first half of that first quarter, for the most part, they were pretty slow as well. But that team woke up and just started. I mean, they started to do whatever they wanted on the offensive side.
Yeah, I hear you, Kevin. Remember, the saying is pick your poison, right? So you kind of have to go one or the other, right? Like, no one wants to, like, drink poison and get a bullet to the head at the same time, right? You want to pick one or the other, but it sounds like you're saying that the Oklahoma City defense is not fully committing to one strategy or the other. Kev, we only got a couple of minutes before the break, and so I do want to touch on Orlando-Milwaukee. Like, I think it comes down to, like, are they going to be able to do it again? Or is Milwaukee going to instead, you know, did they wake the sleeping giant? And does Milwaukee absolutely boat race them in game two? The books think they might. It's 12.5 for a spread.
Yeah, so, you know, I kind of chewed your ear off during our pre-show meeting trying to figure out what to do with this Bucks.
How to play it, yeah.
Let me give you guys, though, what was an awesome angle that Gabe Morenci played yesterday here. And I'll give him all the credit in the world for it. It made so much sense. He took every single team that lost in game one in the first quarter yesterday, and it was a clean sweep. Clean sweep. The Brooklyn Nets won the first quarter, and the Sixers won the first quarter, as did, obviously, the Mavs and the Jazz. So for me, man, do I want to lay 12.5? I'm not sure. But if I were to tell you, and you, maybe I'm getting a little too cute here, but -4.5 for the Bucks in the first quarter. I mean, just them to be up by 5, it sounds so small to me. It does. Now, you kind of do the math. You're actually taking them to now be up by like 20 over the course of the game, kind of on the averages there. But like, man, if this team does not come out in the first quarter looking to absolutely blitz this team, and maybe they never will. And 4.5 is a heck of a lot less than 12.5, even though I know we're doing it under far less time. I might be back in the Bucks in the first quarter spread, Dane, and then going from there.
Let me ask you one more thing about this. I see a first half Bucks total of 59.5. If your theory is that they're going to blitzkrieg them early, what about just doing it instead of a spread, but on like a Milwaukee team total?
Yep, I like that a lot. I mean, there's a chance that this team has 70, even, you know, trying to go the other way too on an under Orlando. Like, it wouldn't shock me if they score 18 points in one of those first two quarters.
Yep, it wouldn't shock me if Giannis does not need to play the fourth quarter in this one. We will wrap up our number one. We talk Major League Baseball and NFL news and notes as well.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back in, everybody. Here on the early line, getting you the edge on Sports Grid, Dane Martinez and, of course, Kevin Walsh. Kev, I said it was a jam-packed day in the association today, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention more than just the four games going off. We'll obviously talk about the nightcap when we come back to lead off our number two. But, Kev, there is also today some ping-pong balls flying around, or metaphorically speaking, right? As the NBA draft lottery will also be televised in between two of the games today. So, you know, it's interesting because in the NHL, we had our guys come on and talk about how it was a little bit weird. And I got to tell you, it's a little bit weird. You know, we've seen teams like Phoenix and Washington and Sacramento and, of course, the Memphis Grizzlies. And now we're going to be talking about those teams in a completely different context. You know, I'm hoping the Knicks wind up getting it. But what do you think is going down in the draft lottery? And who are some of the names we're talking about? Wiseman, Ball, and the like?
Yeah, so first of all, just know last year was absolute madness when it came to those ping pong balls. Like, because they completely changed the odds, and you had the Pelicans with like the 11th and 12th best odds, and they ended up winning the whole thing. The Lakers
Knicks fans
themselves
still thought it was going to be
top four.
At that point, Knicks fans thought it was going to be Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and Zion Williamson in the Garden. Yeah. Remember?
Which was,
and of course, they wound
which
up
was always because, hilarious.
You know, Ja would have wound up okay at number two as well. No slight on RJ. But so what do we think is going to happen tonight?
Look, I'm very, very excited. You know, you'll probably see all the mock drafts break out right away. Anthony Edwards is the favorite to go number one overall at -110. What's interesting is if these odds move once the order gets set, because this will go from kind of number one overall pick to who will X draft. So is a very big difference. Now, also, I mean, whoever gets that pick could very well trade it. But I just think that's a big point to note here, where if you maybe think there's a couple of more teams that would take, say, a LaMelo Ball over an Anthony Edwards at 3-1, you might want to make that move now before everything moves.
You know, and I'm reminded this might be before your time, but one season when the Spurs were horrible, even though they had David Robinson, who was injured, they wind up getting Tim Duncan. Watch where the Golden State Warriors wind up as they reload. Hour number two is next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.